Hey guys, Dave here of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom and I recently put together our thoughts and observations on recent offseason events impacting your Crimson Tide. We really hope you enjoy this. Catch is, we went a little long. We've got about 90 minutes of content, and rather than try to edit that down or over-edit the two podcasts, what we're going to do is split this up into two parts, and we're going to have a little bit of a hard stop on part one and a little bit of a hard start on part two. Nothing dramatic, you'll ease right through it, but I wanted to set that up front. Also want to commit to you that we're going to have part two dropping really quickly, so there won't be much of a delay, just maybe a day or two. So we hope you enjoy it. Go to the website or the Facebook site and give us your feedback, give us your thoughts, and we hope you enjoy. Roll Tide. Thanks.
Blow the horn, let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guy you're playing against. And make his ass quit! That's our framework! That's our MO with the team!
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready!
Alright. Hey, is this thing on? Is this thing on? Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tommy, we had to dust off the mic and dig out the equipment. We haven't done an episode for a while. We were a little negligent for reasons heavy-handed on the brown water, not talking about the Mississippi or the Michigan State game. But here we are. We're back with another live recording for the fans, and of course, you and I have a passion when it comes to talking to the Tide. So why don't we step through? We have some topics. We know it's the off season, but or really the non-playing season. So I think we have a couple topics we want to hit. Let me run these down, and we'll jump in. You good with that?
That works. Let's go.
All right. Why don't we spend a couple minutes talking about the bowl game, talk about observations that still have legs today and into next season, talk about changes on our coaching staff. We've had three what I think are significant changes, and that's the most changes that we've seen while Saban has been captain of the Tide. Let's talk about 2010 players that will miss. And let's talk about players who still may leave. I think there's guys on the roster that may not be here come the fall. Let's spend a little bit of time talking about the recruiting and the new members of the Crimson Tide that will join us, some for spring and some for summer and fall drills. And then let's talk about our top storylines that we're looking for leading into spring drill. So that's kind of the rundown of the topics that I think we want to hit. You good with that?
That works. Let's go with that.
Well, let's jump right in. And, of course, we know that we played on January the 1st, so that's been a little bit of time. But we played Michigan State in the Capital One bowl game. They were a seventh-ranked team. They were a highly regarded, highly considered team. And we drubbed them pretty well with a 49-7 margin. I identified a couple of takeaways from that game. We're not going to blow it out like we do in a true post game, but I have a couple takeaways that I want to spend a minute with that I think still have legs, that still have some resonance today. You good with that?
Yeah, go ahead and give me your first one.
The first one that I have, I guess I have a little bit of ADD, so I've got a little structure here. I've got one offense and one defense. My offense is Eddie Lacy. Eddie Lacy breaks off a 60-yard touchdown run, and Saban's reaction to that touchdown run
was
pretty comical. Saban is the grand marshal of preaching, don't look at the scoreboard, go out and compete and play. Saban, at the same time, he's also human. This just in. He's human. He coached at Michigan State. He has friends and he has relations there. And so when Eddie Lacy runs that 60-yard run, Saban's pissed off. And I look at it as, Lacy's a talented kid.
He had some fumbles earlier in the season, and he comes in at that point in the ball game. He knows the ball's his. He knows Trent. You know, Trent's out, Mark's out. It's his chance to shine, and he shows some determination, some resolve. He hits the hole, heads down. It was a dive play right up the middle, but he busts it for a long run. Saban gets pissed off. I'm trying to run out the clock and not run up the score, but I can't stop talent, and that's something that I'm excited about going into the next season.
Yeah, and it was funny whenever we were watching that game. I mean, you know, we even talked about what we thought Saban was saying on the sideline. It was like, for Pete's sakes, all I was doing was running up the middle. I mean, it's not like I'm trying to do anything flashy. I'm not passing the ball. I'm just running between the guard and the center. And, you know, that was just a game where, you know, we talked about that at the time. That was the perfect opponent for Alabama to play. And it was great that they were highly ranked. And it goes back to the power of the SEC and the dominance of the SEC. And, you know, Todd Blackledge, I'm so glad that he called that game. And
we
know
Todd.
He talked a couple times during that game of, this was what the Alabama faithful thought they were going to have this year. And he even made a comment. He said, if they would have been healthy and played like this, he said, nobody would have beaten them. And I'm sorry, fans are a little bit watching that game saying, oh, shit, that's what I thought I was going to see all year. Because we did. We drubbed a team that was a perfect, it was also a perfect match for us. I mean, the teams that we couldn't play this year was the mobile quarterbacks. I mean, this was the non-mobile quarterback, slow defense. I mean, the speed that our defensive line had was not speed that they had seen all year.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm not trying to pick on the Big Ten, but it was almost as if they're a junior version of a power team, a junior version of a pro set team. We're not going to spread you around. We're not going to do all these herky-jerky crazy things. We're going to run the ball, and we're going to run a pro set, and we're going to play a straight-up defense, and they were tailor-made. They were the number set, you know, for our psyche as a fan base and as a team. Nation's perspective. January 1st bowl game, the number 7th ranked team in the country, and we hit them over the head with a hammer repeatedly.
We were up 24-0 on national TV on the number 7 team in the country.
It was good times.
So, and also one other comment I want to make about the game real quick is just one thing is that we did see some guys that were back healthy. And we also saw some guys like Marcel Darius. You know, Marcel, I loved what you did for the University of Alabama program. I wish you wouldn't have put on that 20 pounds in 2010. But, you know, there was some extra motivation in that bowl game. And some of those guys were playing at a little different level than I had seen them play. I'm not saying that for whatever it was, we just saw from the defensive side what we thought we were going to see all year. We had a healthy Courtney Upshaw, which I'm sorry, was the most valuable player on defense besides Mark Barron. A healthy Courtney Upshaw was better than Darius. He was better than Hightower. He was a one-man wrecking crew. And so in that bowl game, you saw a Marcel Darius that required a double team. You saw Upshaw that required a double team. We had not done that all year.
You saw a healthy Hightower as well. And so each of those three players were healthy. You know, Upshaw got hurt in the Penn State game, and so he was gimpy for a better part of the season. He really flashed in the Auburn game because he had some time to repair.
Flashed in the Florida game.
But he was sensational against Michigan State. And that's the defensive side of the point that I want to make. And I want to go two different ways with this. I want to say Courtney Upshaw, boy, when he was healthy, he was a revelation. And if we get that Courtney Upshaw,
he's what Nick Saban wants. I'm sorry to cut you off. He's what Nick Saban wants at the Jack linebacker.
He played so well in that ball game that there was talk that, hey, he's a junior. He may go pro.
I told you that.
Yeah,
I was concerned about that.
There was some concern about that. And there had been no concern of that over the season. But coming out of that game, that was a question. Now, I love Courtney Upshaw. I love his dedication. I love his play. And if we get, you know, 80-90% of that, you know, all season next season, I'm going to be ecstatic. But I'm going to throw a cautionary tale out at you. And that's the Marcel Darius tale. I think Marcel Darius has made a career and has made a top draft pick and has made millions of dollars out of his one interception of a screen pass against Texas in the national title game next year, last year. And so, you know, he catches that ball, and Mack Brown, you know, his interview was, I've never seen a screen pass intercepted. And the commentators repeatedly say, I've never seen a 300-pounder with a spin move like that. And he parlays that into the best player, you know, in some quarters in college football this year. And then he's going to be a top draft pick. I was listening to a podcast today about the draft, and you know, people were thinking
he's one of the top DLs.
People may think Denver may take him with a number two pick, and I think he made all of that cash off of that one play in the national title game. And so the cautionary tale that I just want to put out there is, Courtney Upshaw, please don't follow that model.
No, and we also, you know, I was not aware that Marcell Dareus had some family tragedies to deal with during the football season last year, and, you know, lost a close family member, lost his mother, and is my understanding, and that's a difficult thing to have to deal with. And I'll never forget, at the beginning of the season, national TV, ESPN telecast, the training day, when they're running the wind sprints, and Nick Saban, for those of y'all that didn't watch the show, he calls out 57, and he said, 57, I knew you when you were 20 pounds lighter.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Marcell Dareus played in that bowl game the way I expected him to play all season long. And one other funny thing real quick, I know we're not going to spend much time on this, but guys, for those of you that don't know Alex Watkins is a nobody that cost us numerous plays this year, not containing, you know, not playing disciplined football, and he's just not Alabama linebacker material. He knocked out Michigan State's quarterback by bull rushing their left tackle. And so when I saw that in the game, I said, that speaks to the talent differential in this ball game, that Alex Watkins knocked out Michigan State starting quarterback. So I just thought that was humorous.
I think I think that could be a poster or an ad campaign for the talent differential between the SEC and the Big Ten if one wanted to go that route. Why don't we switch gears a little bit and talk about changes on our coaching staff? Tommy, we've actually had three coaching changes. I'm going to label them as significant, and this is the most turnover in a Saban staff while he's been at Alabama. Let me set up each of these, and I'm going to give you my plus minus equal, and you tell me what you think. I think I have these in chronological order of when they took place. Bo Davis left the Tide. He's a defensive line coach. Left and went to Texas and was replaced by Chris Rump from Clemson. And two of the things that stood out to me that Saban said about Chris Rump in his press conference is that Chris is a teacher and that Chris is a good recruiter. And those stand out as two very good things. I think personally that our defensive line needed some spark from last season. We were only able to manufacture pressure and not really get some pressure from the technique of the players. I see this as a net gain in the coaching staff. What do you think?
You know, I will say that I think Bo Davis was a very loyal coach to Coach Saban. He had been with him for a long time. I do think that, you know, Coach Saban not only is he a great talent evaluator of players, he's a great talent evaluator of coaches. And, you know, would he have made a change if Bo Davis would not have initiated it? Probably not. I'm a little surprised that Bo Davis went to the University of Texas. But I will say, you know, having watched a little bit of the Clemson games in 2010, I do think that the play they had from the defensive line position, seemed like they were doing a pretty good job. You know, the kid's name was escaping me at the moment, Daquan Bowers, you know, who was the number one player in the country 3 years ago.
Yeah.
He has progressed, and he is projected as one of the top two or three defensive linemen coming out as a junior.
Yeah, he's a top defensive end. He had 15.5 sacks last year. I have read, and it's speculation, and so, I don't want to trade too heavily in that, but I've heard that there was no love lost when Bo Davis left. We may not have asked him to leave, but we certainly didn't I think we held the door open for him when he did leave. And within hours, we had identified Chris Rompin. And so what that tells me, and as we go through this, we've replaced most, you know, two of the three coaching changes pretty quickly. If you could break into Coach Saban's office and pull his desk drawer out, look on the bottom of it, there's a piece of paper taped to the bottom of it with names, and Chris Rump's name, I think, clearly was on that list, because we replaced Bo Davis just so quickly.
Are you surprised if that's the case, that because Dabo Swinney, who we have a lot of high regard for as a coach. I mean, Dabo Swinney was Coach Saban's first phone call when he got the job at Alabama. That was the first coach he tried to get to come to Alabama. Are you surprised that Chris Rump would leave so quickly and so easily?
I don't know. I like Dabo. I actually had classes with him, grad school classes, when he was a GA at Alabama. And so I like Dabo. I think he's done some great job recruiting there at Clemson. I just think there's an odd incestuous relationship right now between Clemson and Alabama, and I say that because Kevin Steele left us and went to Clemson, and Dabo's over there now, and Saban had an interest in Dabo, and we get Chris Rompf, and I don't think there's anything to that more than just the significance. And he was a talented defensive line coach at a point when we had a need for a defensive line coach. And so there you have it. That's who we have now.
Okay.
Let me move to the second one. Joe Pendry moved into what I'm going to call a soft retirement. He's still working for the university, and he's still going to do some administrative work with Mal Moore. But he's not a coach, not an on-the-field coach. And we've replaced him with Jeff Stoutland from Miami. Just a minute on Jeff Stoutland. He was named as the interim head coach when Randy Shannon was fired. And, so he coached the bowl game. And that speaks, if you're going to take a whole coaching staff, and there's an offensive and defensive coordinator, and so if you can drill down to the offensive line coach and name him as your interim head coach, there's certainly some respect within.
It's an interesting person to pick, your offensive line coach.
Exactly. And so there's certainly some respect within the Miami administration. So I point to that. And I'm qualifying a little bit because I have a lot of respect for Pendry. But Pendry's, his mid-60s anyways. And he wasn't long for the program. And so his retirement was just a matter of time. I'm going to be optimistic, and I'm going to call this a wash, because we're bringing in a highly regarded offensive line coach that's significantly younger, that's going to have some motivation, that's going to hit the recruiting trail. And that's one thing on Pendry. The recruits loved him, but he was a on-site recruiter, on-site meaning on campus. He did not wander off campus, at least far, to recruit players. And I think Jeff Stoutland's going to give us that dimension to our coaching staff. So I'm optimistically, for those qualified reasons, going to call this a wash. What are your thoughts?
Well, I guess the first thing I want to say about Pendry is, for what it's worth, is I had no idea when he stepped on campus. I didn't know his name. I didn't know how good of a coach he was. And so, first of all, I think he was a hell of a coach. And what he has been able to do with the offensive line is amazing. I don't know a whole lot about Stoutland. I do know that Miami's offensive linemen have been highly regarded. They've projected well in the NFL with good NFL careers. And, for what you're saying as far as the age disparity and where Pendry is in his career and where Jeff is, and the fact that Pendry is still there, I mean, let's face it, who knows? Pendry might still be sitting out there at practice because he ain't got anything better to do than come out there and still give a little pointer here and give a little pointer there. So we might get the best of both worlds.
Well, his on-campus recruiting activities, they may not necessarily change that much. He may still, he's not going to be the line coach, and there's going to be some differential. But the personality that he projected and the experience that he projected and the relationships that he was able to build with, let's be realistic, he's 67 and he's building relationships with 17-year-olds. That's a unique talent. And the fact that he's still going to be there and able to do that in some capacity, that helps me say it's potentially a net wash.
Okay, I can go with that.
The third coaching change that we made, and this was more recent, but Kirk Cignetti, the wide receiver coach, went to Indiana University of Pennsylvania to become their head coach, and he was replaced by Mike Groh, who was the quarterback most recently at Louisville. Just to qualify a little bit, Mike Groh was a GA at Alabama for the 09 team, which is something of an anomaly because he spent about 10 years as a coach at Virginia. He started after being one of their record-setting quarterbacks. He started as a wide receiver coach and spent a number of years as their offensive coordinator. So I think he has a lot of talent. In terms of the wide receiver development that we've seen on our team, I guess I have to say that I'm excited about this change more than any. I think Mike Groh brings in a certain personality, a certain experience. I think he's overqualified to be a receivers coach, but I think he's going to step in and do very well at that position. I think he and his wife are very excited to be back in Tuscaloosa. And Kirk Cignetti, I'm not mad at him. I think he's done a serviceable job. Coach Saban coached with his dad when he broke into the coaching ranks. And I think Kirk was someone that we were never going to let go because he was serviceable. But I don't think that he was an above and beyond coach. I think Mike Groh has the potential for that. I see this as a net gain relative to the exchange there. What are your thoughts?
Let me first say you're a hell of a lot more tactful than I am, because I have not been a fan of Coach Cignetti for a couple years now. And for what you just said, was he probably going anywhere? No. But the wide receiver position, of all the positions on our team, is a position where the players have regressed once they have gotten to Alabama. It kind of reminds me of when Coach Shula was the head coach, and there was thoughts there that when players got to Alabama, they didn't continue getting better and better and better. And when you look at the wide receiver position, Julio was good when he got here. And I'm sorry, I just don't feel like the wide receiver position that the players have really had the coaching that they've needed to take that next step. And so for this guy to have coached under his dad at Virginia and have the pedigree that he has under his father, and then be able to go make an impact at a Louisville like he did, where the receivers do bring the element to receiving that we want to have in our balanced offense, I think it's definitely a net gain.
All right. You want to talk about the coaching changes that were not made and the impact that those have?
You know, I think as far, I mean, I guess the first thing there, you're probably speaking of Kirby Smart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kirby Smart, I mean, he's going to Georgia. He ain't going to Georgia right now, but he's going to Georgia. I mean, it's just, how long is Mark Richt going to be there?
Well, hey, I'm glad Mark Richt wasn't fired, and I'm glad that Mark Richt had some success on the recruiting trail. How about that?
Guys, Mark Richt will be fired at the end of 2011, okay? And so enjoy Kirby Smart while you can, because he'll be there for one more year. And I think Kirby Smart is a great young coach. And unfortunately, Nick Saban has too many of his damn disciples going in the SEC.
Yes.
They need to go to another conference. But, yeah, I think Kirby Smart staying around for $750,000, which is what Georgia would have paid him.
Yeah.
I think it's great that he stayed. I think that having stability in the coaching staff is so key. And we saw that back in DeBose. We saw that back in Shula. That's the other thing about Saban, is even the guys that he's bringing in, like this Mike Groh, right? Well, guys, it's not a coincidence that he was part of the Alabama coaching staff in 2009. Because there's the cohesiveness. He knows them. They know that they get along with him. You know what I'm saying? They can have a beer together. There's something to that.
The coaches, not the players. But yes, in terms of a new personality. you bring in three new coaches. I don't want to underestimate the impact that that can have. But you make a good point that Groh comes in and he's one of the guys. Where were you? You know, we missed you last year, but we're glad you're back. And so he's not a new personality. He doesn't have to learn the terminology. He doesn't have to bend his head to fit the Saban way because he knows it. And he wanted to come back and do it again.
I started to say real quick, guys, he's there for the right reason. David just said he was overqualified. Why do you think he's there?
Right.
Because he wants to be the next Kirby Smart in 4 or 5 years. He wants to go get the Nick Saban pedigree so he can go elsewhere and be a head coach in a few years.
Well, it's certainly a positive stamp to have on your career. And Kirby Smart, you know, hey, I'm gonna root for Georgia just enough for Rick to keep his job. This is a different podcast, but I think Georgia's in contention to win the East next year. And so that keeps Rick in place, which I think keeps Smart in place. Smart could have potentially, there was rumors of him going to Florida with Muschamp, and so that didn't happen. And so keeping Kirby Smart was significant. And then Sports Illustrated named Sal Cenceri the number one recruiting coach in the country, and we kept him. And he actually had two swipes at the Pitt job. I don't know why, but they kicked out Wani, and then they brought in a character that had some domestic violence charges within 26, 36, 72 hours of him being hired. So he was let go. And Cenceri not only has a son who just committed to Alabama, but his older son is the starting quarterback at Pitt. And so if he's going to go,
it would have been an easy. You couldn't have faulted the guy for making the move.
Well, if he's going to go anywhere, you know, there's the thought that, well, he's going to stay at Alabama because his son. And so you think, well, hell, if he's going to go anywhere, it's going to be to Pitt for the sake of his son. And so the fact that, you know, we've had the three changes, and so those were made. But the fact that we kept Sal and we kept Kirby, I think, are significant.
No, they are. And real quick, to go back to Cignetti as a comparison, look at Sal and look at the impact he has made on a Courtney Upshaw. Look at potentially the impact he has had on Courtney Upshaw and his maturing at the position at Jack linebacker and what he brings to the table now. And so, yeah, having him with his pedigree was a great keep on their part.
I think he's a great coach, and I'm glad that we have him still on our staff. Why don't we switch gears and Why don't we talk a little bit about the 2010 players that we'll miss the most? And it's easy to talk about maybe some of the highlight guys, Greg McElroy and a Mark Ingram and some of the stars. Tommy, we didn't have a lot of seniors who left, but we had some significant seniors, and we had a number of guys underclassmen that left. We have, you know, Mark and Julio and Marcel. B.J. Scott left as an underclassman as well, not to go pro, but to transfer. Talk to me about the players that you think that we're going to miss the most from 2010. And I'm going to challenge you a little bit because, you know, if we were to look back a year ago, what are the players that we're going to miss the most from the 09 team? I don't think Brandon Diedrich or Lorenzo Washington would have made anybody's list. But you give me one of those players, and I give you a win in the Iron Bowl last year.
No, that's a good point. You know, I guess if I was looking at the roster, I would have to first start. Just the first name that comes out to me has got to be Preston Dial. Preston Dial came out of nowhere. You know, yes, he's been, you know, a letterman for 3 years, but Preston Dial comes out of nowhere and takes over that tight end position that we thought was Brad Smellie's. We really thought that position was Smellie's to lose. And Preston Dial comes out of nowhere playing an H-back position and gives us the fullback blocking and the hands out of the hands in the flats that he had not shown before. And so I know he was one of your guys all year, and he's just the first guy that jumps out at me that was a very serviceable guy that, you know, I hope we can find somebody to fill his shoes.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to convert you on Preston Dial, to be honest with you, because I was giving him the mini game balls many times during the season because, man, he just had that senior leadership and that senior tenacity and that senior intangible that he just projected.
You can count on him. He's not going to screw it up.
Yeah, and his performance just seemed to exude, that intangible. And so I had high regards on him for most of the season. This is a tough pick because I don't want to pick a name guy, but at the same time, I'm kind of drawn to some of the name guys, and I'm drawn to them almost for an inverse reason. And let me explain this a little bit. A lot of people are going to say, we're not going to miss Greg McElroy because we got a competition for, between, McCarron and Phillip Sims. And so we're not going to miss McElroy.
Because one of them will just fill in.
Yeah. Right. Oh, really? You're not going to miss a senior quarterback in the SEC?
Who was undefeated up until the end of his career.
Exactly. And so, oh, really? You're not going to miss him. And then people are going to say, oh, we're not going to miss Mark Ingram because, we've got Trent coming up. And I'm going to say, oh, really? You're not going to miss the only Heisman-winning trophy player
ever
in the history of the storied Alabama's, history. And so, I'm challenged, not to pick those guys because they're the name, they're the highlight guys, right? They're not the Brandon Dietrichs.
Right.
But at the same time, the reasons that people give that we're not going to miss those, that's whistling past the graveyard, and I just really believe that. And I'm gonna and the player that I think that we might miss is James Carpenter, who I think is the quietest.
That was gonna be my next guy,
not just in his vernacular, but just in terms of fan recognition. I think is the quietest starter that we've had for the last 2 years because James Carpenter stepped in as a JUCO player and he took over day one. For a little player, I like to call Andre Smith, an irreplaceable player.
Yes.
And James Carpenter stepped in, did not miss a beat. We won the national title. We don't win that with James Carpenter, without James Carpenter. If we get a Kendrick Lott as the JUCO tackle instead of the James Carpenter, we don't win the national title.
I started to say that's another point for all of you Alabama guys that have been, frustrated over the past decade pre-Saban. We also, when James Carpenter came in, had in our mind a Kendrick Lott, an Aries Monroe. How many other busts at JUCO did we have in our... My point is that we were seeing that saying, okay, yeah, another JUCO's going to
save
the
day. Well, we almost stayed away from JUCOs in terms of recruiting, and those of us who have kind of kept up with that, it's almost you laugh at, oh, shit, we're getting a JUCO, and we're going to get another one of these guys that has just been nothing. I'm going to say this, though, about Mark Ingram. He's a very talented player, and I know that we have Trent Richardson behind him. But there's a little bit of a dynamic here that I want to speak to that just, put this under your hat and just think about this sometime during the fall. Mark was sort of is a year ahead of Trent. And so, he was the confidant of Trent, and he was... he took him under his wing and they became equals, but they became equals after Mark had taken him under his wing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they were the two top running backs, and then it was the people behind them. And it was Jostin and Demetrius and Eddie Lacy. And so what happens when Trent loses, and I don't know Trent personally, and I don't know his makeup, but what happens when he loses that shield, when he loses that cover that he's had from Mark? And that's discounting altogether Mark's superior talent on the field. He's going to be in a top-round draft pick. But Trent's losing something in losing Mark. A lot of people are going to say, well, Trent's getting more carries, so he's going to be better. But that's discounting what Trent's losing as a person. I don't know. What do you think about that? Is there something to that?
Well, who was the defensive lineman that went to Kentucky because he wasn't, in my opinion, man enough to come to Alabama?
Dwayne Robinson.
Okay. Trent Richardson, to his credit, signed with Alabama. It was down to Alabama and Florida on signing day. His high school mascot is a gator. There was a gator on the banner in the background behind him as he puts on the Bear Bryant hat. Joker could have gone to Florida and been the Mark Ingram of the University of Florida. He goes to Alabama knowing that Mark Ingram is there because he accepted the challenge. So to your part, I guess I would add to that and say, I hope that an Eddie Lacy can give him the competition that he needs. Because I think Trent Richardson needs to be pushed. Damn, I got to work harder because the Heisman Trophy winner is right here next to me. So losing a Mark Ingram, he's lost his confidant who's helping push him because he was the Heisman Trophy winner. So that's what I see from Trent Richardson. A, everybody's going to be keying on him because Mark Ingram's gone. But, I mean, what happens? He came there for the competition. So what happens now that Mark Ingram's gone?
I recognize that I'm treading on Dr. Phil territory here, so I'm going to be very quick on this thin ice. But not only do I hope that Eddie Lacy has the talent to compete with Mark, or with Trent, rather, but I hope he has the talent to earn Trent's respect.
Yes, yes.
Right? To feel I was co-equal with Mark, but now I'm co-equal with Eddie.
Well, and guys,
I think there's something there.
And guys, I know we're running long, but we're getting warmed up because we hadn't done this in
That's
a while.
That's right.
It speaks back to early in the season when Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson pulled Eddie Lacy to the side when he had a fumble. And they were the first two guys to greet him on the sideline and pick him back up. Hopefully, Trent will take him under his wing, and I think he will, the same way Ingram took Trent under his ring. Under his wing.
Did we settle on a player in 2010 that we're gonna miss the most?
Of all the players, you know, in my opinion, of all the players that we're going to miss the most, I mean, I guess it really does have to be McElroy. I mean, if you called me out to pick a player, I think it has to be McElroy. He'd been in the system 3 years. He knows the offense inside and out. Guys, he's going to be an NFL head coach one day. I mean, they just don't come around all the time. And a Nick Saban. Who was the quarterback at LSU who's escaping me at the moment? The pre-Jamarcus?
Oh, hell, I don't know, man. Come on.
My point is he was the Trent Dilfer. Nick Saban needs a Trent Dilfer to work his magic. He needs a quarterback that's going to minimize mistakes, he's going to protect his football, and he's gonna do what the offense wants to do. And I just hope that a McCarron or a Phillip Sims can be that Trent Dilfer.
Well, and you know, in deference to Greg and those that are listening that will get this, Greg was a field general, not a game manager. But I'm going to say the player that we're going to miss the most, you know, and God bless them all. We're going to miss a lot of them. And we didn't even mention Julio's name, who opens up the offense in terms of a receiver and the defense has to know where he is. But I'm going to go back to James Carpenter, and I'm going to go back to the left tackle. That's a position, especially breaking in a new quarterback. You're breaking in a new quarterback, and a new left tackle. There's some symbiosis between those two positions, and we're going to have new guys at each of those. And so you're going to go to the quarterback. I'm going to go to the left tackle, and I think somewhere between there, that's going to be the miss.
Real quick, interestingly enough, two things on that. Guys, we saw in the Sugar Bowl against Utah what happens when you don't have consistency at left tackle when Andre Smith wasn't able to play in that ball game.
Yes.
Second of all, I just thought about something based on what David said. We had this 2 years ago. James Carpenter started his first ball game against Virginia Tech in Atlanta, Georgia, and Greg McElroy started his first ball game.
Yeah.
So we're doing the same thing 2 years later with a brand new quarterback and a brand new left tackle.
That's a great point. So that'll be fun to watch.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Hi.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Hi.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Hi.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Blow the horn, let's go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.